You're listening to an iHeart podcast.
In the fall of 1986, Ronald Reagan found himself at the center of a massive scandal that looked like it might bring down his presidency. It became known as the Iran-Contra affair.
The things that happened were so bizarre and insane, I can't begin to tell you.
Please do.
To hear the whole story, listen to Fiasco, Iran-Contra on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia.
On this week's episode of Math and Magic, I'm sitting down with the one and only Bobby Bones. We're exploring the power of audio.
Yeah, I don't fit into one specific hole. I think that is what endeared me to listeners. That's why I'm here now, because I talk to people that grew up like me, have sensibilities like me, and have loyalties like me.
Listen to Math and Magic, stories from the frontiers of marketing on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
Hey, Clay, if there was a summer camp for critical thinking, we'd be the chief counselors.
Those jellyheads in June would be intellectual warriors by August.
Be a lot of fun, too. Some Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure references thrown in.
This podcast, like a daily dose of that, minus the campfires, archery, and pranking the girls.
The bona fide boot camp for critical thinking. You can get in on it for free at the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search our names, Clay and Buck, listen, and subscribe.
You don't have to dip forever. You know that, right? You don't have to smoke forever. And the reason I say it like that is I have been that guy. I've been that guy. I dipped for so long. And what would happen is I would decide I'm going to quit. Oh, it's bad for me. I'm going to quit. I'm a man. I don't need any help. I'm just going to quit cold turkey. And I would fail time and time and time again. I tried things like the patch. That didn't work. Gum, sunflower seeds. I tried it all. It's just a matter of finding the right thing to help you quit. That's Jake's Mint Chew. Go, put in your dip. Just make sure it's Jake's Mint Chew. It's tobacco-free. It's nicotine-free. It's even sugar-free. And I highly recommend, just a personal choice, I highly recommend their CBD pouches because it really helps take that extra edge off. Get a jakesmintchew.com. That's jakesmintchew.com. Make sure you use the promo code Jesse at checkout. When you do that, you get 10% off.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the greatest of all days. It is an Ask Dr. Jesse Friday on the Jesse Kelly Show. I know what you're saying right now. Jesse, I love you. This is better than Christmas. And you are right, obviously. What, Chris? We have... Man, did you bring it on the questions today? We have the best questions we've ever had. Somebody wants to know. I talk a lot about national divorce, right? How I feel like we should get a national divorce. We've grown apart. We should separate. Fancy schmancy lawyer has a serious question about national defense after national divorce. We'll talk about it. What if I had daughters instead of sons? What would I be doing differently? Someone wants to know that. Another guy, get this one, Chris, and I know there are people going through this because I get emails all the time like this. Another guy has found himself a bit estranged from family and friends after their conduct during COVID. How should he handle himself going forward? Like I said, it's a crazy, crazy fun day. Would I pass a cop if the cop wasn't doing the speed limit or barely doing the speed limit? I actually have a personal story to tell about that. It's going to be a great day on an Ask Dr. Jesse Friday. Certainly better than it was for the Aztecs back in the 1500s. You see that, Chris? You see how masterful that was? Not just anybody can do that. Make that transition. What? That's a special talent. All right, in all seriousness, let's tell our Aztec conquistador story, and then we'll dig into your questions on an Ask Dr. Jesse Friday. And before I forget, let me just clarify something right now. I'm not having any guests today. I don't think I'm going to have any guests again ever on Friday. And in fact, I think I'm paring down every show to one guest. I think I'm going to do that. There will obviously be exceptions. But for the most part, let's be honest. You want to hear me. What? All right. 1520, 1500s. Let's do a little brief setup for you because I haven't done a conquistador story in quite some time. I realize we have a bunch of new listeners. And for all you new listeners, allow me to just say right out of the gates, you're welcome. All right. Anyway, Spain is conquering the Western Hemisphere. And we've talked about this before. It's worth looking up. Spain at the height of its empire, Spanish map during the colonial period. If you looked up something like that online, what I'm getting to is eventually you will see a map of all the territories Spain controlled in the height of its power. And when you look at that map, your jaw will drop. I knew they controlled a lot. Then I looked at the map and I thought to myself, how in the world is Spain a second-rate power today? Maybe second-rate, by the way, is being generous. How is Spain basically a third-rate power today? Remember, we're talking about 600 years ago. Not even. I understand that's a little bit long, but over the span of history, that's not that long. 600 years ago, they owned the Western Hemisphere. And Spain, well, Spain had a purpose when it went sailing abroad, and Spain's purpose was fairly straightforward. They were an extremely, and I guess probably still are, but they were an extremely Catholic nation. Let's just call it Christian to make things easier for us to understand here. They wanted people to convert to Christianity, and they wanted gold. And there really wasn't a third thing. In fact, most people will say that's probably why they ultimately failed when they colonized a place. Britain always colonized a place right. They just mastered it. When Britain colonized you, you knew it. They were going to come in, take over, do whatever they had to do, and then they were going to build schools and cities and towns, and they were just going to move in because Britain always understood, which is a historical fact, possession is 9/10 of the law. I don't care that you landed on a beach and planted a flag and said this belongs to Spain. I have a town here and now a fort. This actually belongs to me. What are you going to do about it? That's the smarter way to do it, historically speaking. Anyway, Spain is in the 1500s. Remember when Columbus sailed, everybody, 1492 and all that other stuff from the sound. So we're right in that era. Spain is all over the Western Hemisphere. They're in the Caribbean very much at this time. In fact, our story begins in Cuba. And they have governors. Now, you have a guy in charge of Cuba. And look, he's going to administer Cuba on behalf of Spain. He's going to pillage it for all it's worth, all the sugar. Cuba's always been huge on sugar. And he's going to dig around whenever the opportunity arises for more gold and more glory. He wants to please the Spanish king. Now, on Cuba, there's a man by the name of Hernan Cortez, one of the most underrated historical figures in the history of mankind. What this man accomplished in his lifetime is staggering, including our story today, which I will get to pretty much right now. Cortez is, well, let's just say he's probably not the most morally sound man. And look, remember, I'm not saying that from a position of judgment. There's nobody more morally bankrupt than me. But Cortez was a bit rough around the edges, you would say, morally. He was awesome with a sword. Even the men who hated him talked about how great he was with a sword. He was absurdly brave. And almost, I mean, this may be his number one quality, depending on how you want to look at it. His ability to manipulate men and bend men to his will with manipulation is, I don't know that he's ever been beaten. What I mean by that is this. He manages to get permission from the governor to take an expedition over to Mexico. Now, Mexico obviously wasn't Mexico quite yet. Mexico had a ton of indigenous tribes, Indian tribes, however you want to call it, the Mayans and the gigantic tribe, the Aztecs. And they had all kinds of other tribes, which we'll get to in a moment. We only talk about Mayans and Aztecs when it comes to Mexico. Just like America, there were different tribes all over the place. The Aztecs, you have to understand this. They dominated Mexico. They dominated anybody they wanted. They were huge. They were militarily fierce. They had these gigantic clubs that they would put razor-sharp obsidian rock in. They were just very, very fierce people. War, they loved war. And to their credit, and you know I hate the Aztecs because of something I'll get to in a moment, but to their credit, they were a fairly sophisticated society. The Europeans, the Spanish, who eventually got to the capital city of the Aztecs, they almost all said, this is the most beautiful city in the world, like more beautiful than anything in Europe. These people, they were clean. They bathed multiple times a day, the Aztecs did. Just a really advanced society. I just despise them because of the whole child sacrifice thing. The Aztecs were absolutely obsessed with sacrificing people alive. They would lay you down on a stone on top of a huge temple. Oftentimes after they made you sing and dance, then they would tie you down and cut your heart out with an obsidian knife while you were alive. And when they were done with that, they would chuck your body down the stairs and people would eat you. Now, that alone is bad enough, but the fact that they would do it to kids often, it takes it to a level that I can't forgive. Like I say, I don't do this, all cultures are equal thing. No, you have a garbage culture. If at any point in time you find yourself sacrificing a child, you should really look around and say, wow, I really took a wrong turn somewhere. So where are we going? Well, you're going to have to buckle up and find out. Also, national defense against China. Hang on.
On the Jordan Harbinger Show, you'll hear amazing stories from people that have lived them, from spies to CEOs, even an undercover agent who infiltrated the Gambino crime family. You're about to hear a preview of the Jordan Harbinger Show with Jack Garcia, who did just that.
My career was 24 out of 26 years was solely dedicated working undercover. Now I walk in, I'm in the bar. Now there's a barmaid there, good-looking young lady. She's serving me a drink. Hey, what would you like? My drink was give me a Kettle One martini, three olives, glass of water on the side. I finish the drink. The guys come in. I'm going to go in my pocket, take out the big wad of money. Bam, I give her $100. If you're with the mob, I say, hey, Jordan, you're on record with us. That means we protect you. Nobody could shake you down. We could shake you down, but you're on record with us.
For more on how Jack became so trusted in the highest levels of the Gambino organization, check out episode 392 of The Jordan Harbinger Show.
Jesse, how do you know that Fauci's a communist? You know the same way I know. You can smell him.
It's the Jesse Kelly Show. 877-377-4373. Jesse at jessekellyshow.com. We are telling a story about Aztecs and conquistadors. And then, no guess. We are dedicating this day to your Ask Dr. Jesse questions. This question about your in-laws and your friends handling COVID poorly and how you're supposed to handle yourself now is a dang good one, as is the national defense. There's crazy questions. We have a piranhas versus polar bear question. So we're all over the place today. But back to our Aztec story. Before I continue on, I mentioned the child sacrifice, human sacrifice thing. Chris has asked that I tell my second favorite history story of all time, since we're talking about Aztecs.
I'll go ahead and lay it out there again. This is a true story that we think is a true story from the Aztecs. The Aztecs, before they were the biggest people on the block, they were really just mercenaries lots of the time in Mexico, really a mercenary tribe. They were great at fighting, kind of thought of to be a bit barbaric. Oh, the Aztecs, they're a little bloodthirsty, but oh, we need some people killed. Hey, Aztecs, do you want to come join us? But the Aztecs are certainly on the rise. Whenever you're a military power, eventually you're on the rise because you keep looking around and thinking, why can't I take these people over? Well, most of the history of the world is powerful nations cementing their relationship through marriages. You've seen it. You know the story. Hand over your son, hand over your daughter, but not, you know, to be tortured to death. Hand him over so he can marry my daughter. And, oh, look, we're one big happy family now, that kind of thing. Well, there's a kingdom out there that's more powerful than the Aztecs. But the Aztecs are on the rise, and this more powerful kingdom says, hey, we need to get ourselves together. We should be together, right? And the powerful kingdom, they take the princess, the daughter of the king, and they marry her off to the Aztecs. Well, I mentioned how I hate the Aztecs because of their child sacrifice, human sacrifice culture. But look, if you have to defend that, it was part of their culture. It was their belief system. It's simply what they believed. And it was sacred to them. So they took the princess, and instead of marrying her, they killed her and then flayed her skin off. Oh, wait, this isn't even close to the worst part. Then the powerful kingdom comes, you know, we're going to have a big visit, one big family. Let's have a visit together. Let's have a big dinner. We're all one big family, right? And the Aztecs are all, sure, come on over. The king gets in there, eventually wants to see his daughter, who he had married off to the Aztecs. An Aztec priest comes out wearing the daughter's skin on his body. The king obviously freaks out. What did you do to my daughter? I mean, you can imagine that would be a bit tough to swallow. And the best part of this story is this. The Aztecs are absolutely lost as to what his problem is. What is your deal, bro? This was an honor. How about thank you? So when I say a bit of a different culture, that's what I mean, a bit of a different culture. Back to Cortez. Cortez gets permission to go explore in Mexico. And then the governor finds out some things he doesn't like about Cortez. I'm not going into the whole thing, but tries to withdraw the permission. But the guy he sent to withdraw the permission ended up dead in a ditch with some stab wounds. So he didn't actually formally withdraw the commission for Cortez. But Cortez takes off knowing he technically is not even allowed to do this. He's already illegal. This whole expedition is illegal. And he takes off and he lands in Mexico with 600 men. That's it. 600 men. Now they have Spanish modern arms, armor, they have firearms, they have cannons, they have horses, they have war dogs, armored war dogs, which were supposed to be really, really horrifying. And Cortez proceeds, and I could spend 9 hours on this story, it's that great, to manipulate and fight his way through all of Mexico. Most of the time, they do it in the cockiest way possible, too. They will storm right into a town. A massively powerful Indian tribe of some kind, they'll just storm right in and they'll essentially read a decree saying, congratulations, you're all now servants of the Spanish king and you better start worshiping Jesus or we'll hang every one of you savages. It was like that. It was like, congratulations on giving up your God and having a new king. You're welcome. And it's successful. Now they get in fights, they bleed, they get in many battles, men die. They're in the jungle, so there's disease all the time. One cool part about it, this is, I hope you're not eating right now, so just buckle up for this one. One cool part is when they had wounds that needed to be closed, they would slice fat, human fat, off of dead bodies and place the fat over the wound and then light it on fire to cauterize the wound. I mean, these are the kind of men we're dealing with here. Hard, brave men. And they're there. on behalf of God and on behalf of gold. And I'm not being dismissive of either one of those things. Some guys were obviously just there for the gold. Some guys were there for God. Some guys were there for both. I'm here for Jesus, and if I make a little money, that's fine too. Cortez is stomping all through Mexico looking for gold. Show me this massive pile of gold, this city of gold, this cave of gold. And he knows, to his credit, listen, employees, he knows, to his credit, if he can make the boss money, that whole illegal expedition thing really won't matter. What I mean by that is, if he can be sending a ship or two back to the Spanish king and saying, hey, I know this expedition is technically illegal, but did I show you how much gold I just brought you? The Spanish king is probably going to be pretty lenient in the end. Well, this is putting the conquistadors on a collision course with the big man on the block, the Aztecs. Eventually they meet, they test each other out. The king of the Aztecs, he's going to play a little part here as I try to wrap this story up. His name is Montezuma. Yes, that Montezuma's revenge, the stomach illness. Yes, that's from this guy's name. Montezuma's the king of the Aztecs. He is trying to warn off the Spanish. He doesn't want the Spanish in his capital. And I'm going to screw up the name of this capital. It's the last time I'm going to say it because I cannot seem to say this word. Tenochtitlan. It's Tenochtitlan. It's really hard. I know it's like that. It was essentially built on a lake with floating gardens and beautiful pyramids where, of course, people were sacrificed. But again, this was the city that was supposed to be absurdly beautiful. It had causeways connecting it to land. No, you can't see it today because it's where modern day Mexico City is. But Montezuma's trying to keep them out. He should have kept them out. Eventually, the Spanish come in, and they come in as if they're friends. Oh, my friend Montezuma. And Montezuma's, oh, my buddy Cortez. And really, they hate each other, and they know they're out for blood. Cortez, again, the guy's just a remarkable human being. He eventually kidnaps Montezuma, who's a god to his people. He kidnaps Montezuma in the city and just keeps him there as kind of a nicely fed prisoner. Oh, sure, have some food. Oh, yeah, you're the king. Oh, no, you can't go for a walk. I mean, not without our people going with you. But Cortez is masterful at manipulation. Now, we are fast-forwarding through a million things here, right? Cortez has a bunch of Indian tribes who are on his side. Why are they on his side? Well, the theme really of our story today is culture has consequences. Why are they on his side? You'll find out in a second. I'll try to wrap this up, and then it's Ask Dr. Jesse time. Hang on. It is the Jesse Kelly Show, 877-377-4373, jesse@jessekellyshow.com on an Ask Dr. Jesse Friday. My big announcement. You have not missed it. It is not coming today. I don't think. It is coming next week. I know what you're thinking. What day next week? It's funny you should ask. I had the same question and have not gotten an answer yet. We may have it Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday, but it is coming next week, hopefully earlier. And yeah, there are big changes coming. Do not freak out. They're all good changes. You're going to enjoy them. I'm going to enjoy them. Very big things are happening. It's frankly unbelievable. But anyway, it's good. We're doing a story right now about the Aztecs and the conquistadors, and then we're moving on to your Ask Dr. Jesse questions. Like, how would I raise girls different than I raise my boys? If we get the national divorce from the communists like I want, what's our national defense look like? I'll lay all that out here in just a few. But Cortez didn't just conquer all of Mexico and end up conquering the Aztecs, not to give away the end of the story, with 600 men. Cortez did this with lots and lots and lots of help. Help from the other Indian tribes. Now, why, oh, why would an Indian tribe help these new white-faced people who really only seem to care about gold and take a unique interest in our women? Well, at least they're not sacrificing us. You see, the Aztecs, they would actually leave tribes alive, almost like cattle, just so they could walk in whenever they wanted and take people away to go sacrifice them to the Aztec gods. Aztecs were that brutal, that bad. Back to our story. Cortez is in the city, Tenochtitlan, and he's really running the city by this point in time because he's kidnapped the king. The Aztec people, as you can imagine, it's a city of several hundred thousand people. The Aztec people are upset. There's a lot of tension. But what are you going to do about it right now? This Cortez guy is really good. But Cortez finally gets word that he's got trouble on the horizon. What's that trouble? Well, remember how the whole expedition was illegal thing? You remember all that? Well, the governor of Cuba decided, okay, I've had about enough of this. This expedition is illegal. You, all you guys, gather up, get on these boats, go over there and drag Cortez back to me in chains or dead. This guy is a traitor and all these other things. Cortez gets word that a large Spanish force has landed and it's landed aiming for him. So he has to make a choice, and he makes it. He leaves a small, relatively small contingent of his guys back in Tenochtitlan, and he takes off to go fight this rival Spanish army that lands to stop him. Now, I'm not going to go over that battle. That's actually a cool battle, too, I could go over. You should know, of course, in true Cortez fashion, not only does he win the battle by the skin of his teeth, but he manages to win over basically the other army, not all of them, but they come over and just join his side. The dude is just, it's absurd. So all that went well, right? Nice, let's go back to Tenochtitlan and hang out with some Indian chicks and do whatever we want to do, right? It's life is good. Not so much good. You see, remember that small contingent he left behind? Well, the tension was already rising before Cortez left town. And if you have a bunch of people who are angry at you anyway, when you have, let's call it 600 troops in town, and then 550 of those troops leave town, the tension between you and the 50 might be a little bit more appealing to escalate that to violence, right? The men Cortez left behind, they supposedly, we say supposedly because we don't know, they supposedly get word that the Aztecs, who have a big festival coming up, are going to use this festival as an excuse to rise up and kill the Spanish and purge them from Tenochtitlan. That's the intelligence they supposedly got. And the Spanish, I mean, the Spanish are not above torturing people for this information. Maybe it's true, maybe it's not. They tortured several of the Aztecs. It's not as if the Aztecs were the only brutal ones here. Long story short, the small contingent he leaves behind comes up with the plan. The plan is simply, let's kill them before they kill us. They wait until there's this big festival, and then they essentially lock down the town square and slaughter people. Slaughter the Aztecs. It is an absolute bloodbath. The Aztecs, understandably, freak out. And this is right about the time Cortez comes strolling right back into town victorious, thinking life is good. Can you imagine that uncomfortable conversation he had to have with the guy he left in charge? You know, the dude he left in charge was all, boss, it wasn't my fault. On my life, it's not my fault. Now, again, in another cool battle, I'll have to tell you about another time. The Spanish have to basically hold up in what I'll call a fortress. It wasn't a fortress, but they have to hold up, hide out, because the Aztecs have pretty much surrounded them and want them all dead. And there are more than enough Aztecs to accomplish this feat. But Cortez is not a man to lay down and die easily, and he's not a man to have no plan, I should say. They decide, here's what we're going to do. Because remember, they have to go over the causeways to get out of this city. They decide to sneak out at night. They almost pull this off. They're going over the causeway, sneaking out at night, trying to get out of the city so they don't all die in there. Boom, someone spots them. I think it was an old woman, if I remember right. I'm almost positive it was a woman. Screams out. The Aztecs swarm out, and now the Spanish have to have this huge fight on the causeway where half of them die. They have their men taken prisoner. It's this terrible thing. Cortez is wounded multiple times. They're all wounded. The Spanish, they are a ragged, ragged group when they make it out of there. And it should be noted, you really didn't want to get caught alive, because the Spanish after this, because the Aztecs had caught some of them, the Spanish had to watch some of their friends get marched up to the top of that temple and stripped naked and had a little headdress put on them and forced to dance before they were laid out and had their hearts cut out of their chest. It's that kind of story. I told you, the Aztec conquistador story is underrated. We do not give it enough credit. It is an intense story. I'm skipping over cool stuff just to try to get through the end here. So the Spanish get out of town and the Aztecs pursue. Kind of. When I say kind of, this is what I mean. The Aztecs gather essentially their entire army. They go after the Spanish, but they think the Spanish are pretty much defeated. And they think, well, let's just take our time and do this smartly and do this right. The Spanish are tired and hungry and wounded. What are they going to do about it? And frankly, when you look at the numbers, it's hard to argue with the Aztecs that they're thinking. How many people did Cortez have? We don't know exactly yet, but we do think he still had around 600 because all the men he had lost, but then gained and then lost and gained. Cortez had around 600. How many did the Aztecs have? 15 to 20,000. So obviously the Aztecs are fairly confident in victory. Now, Cortez did have Indians, lots of them fighting with him as well, that went on top of that 600, but he's way, way outnumbered, way outnumbered. He even gives a speech in front of his men as they line up for battle, because the Aztecs decide they're going to do battle, and he gives a speech and says, don't worry, boys, science and stuff like that will win the day. We'll be fine. He's essentially saying our armor and our bullets will be enough. Well, is it enough? You'll find out next, and then it's Ask Dr. Jesse time. Hang on. Jesse Kelly Show on an Ask Dr. Jesse Friday. We're going to dig into this national divorce thing here in a moment. It's one of your first questions. Someone has a question about the military carrying batteries. We have a sniper battle. Someone wants to know about China's one-child policy handicapping them. All that's coming up soon. First, Cortez is lined up, 600 Spanish conquistadors. A bunch of Indian allies with him. He's lined up against 15 to 20,000 Aztecs. In case you're wondering what Montezuma's doing at this moment, well, he's not doing very much because he's dead. Cortez, during the unrest in the city, brought out Montezuma to try to calm the people down. Clearly, the people had set aside the whole he's a god thing, and they stoned him to death. So Montezuma's gone. Now the Aztecs line up and they're ready to wipe out the Spanish for good. And frankly, this battle probably changes the course of history. It most definitely changes the Western Hemisphere. The Spanish, they were ready and they had a plan. And the plan was simply this. The Aztecs, remember their whole culture biting them in the rear end thing? They had another part of their culture that was really, really not very well thought out. They were excellent in warfare, but their leaders, One, they were very important to the men. You didn't just keep fighting when your leader was gone. You had to have him there. The leaders were important to men. And two, they wanted to make sure everybody on their side knew who and where the leader was. So the leader would dress in this absurd, colorful, loud, you know, it's obvious who the leader is out there. Only it's also obvious to the other guys, too. And Cortez's plan was this. Let's hold them off. Fight as long as we can, and then we will send our cavalry in and we'll kill the leader and finish them off. And it works like a charm. The Spanish, their weapons were too much. The Spanish cavalry were way too much. They called them Castian cavalry, depending on where you went to school. They were just big armored horses that would charge and run you down. It was a fierce battle. The Aztecs acquitted themselves very well. But as soon as Cortez, who led the charge himself, as soon as Cortez led a charge and they finished off, he didn't kill the guy, though one of his other guys killed him. As soon as Cortez led a charge and killed the Aztec leader, the Aztec army melted away and got virtually slaughtered. Your culture can cost you. Even good parts of your culture can cost you and cost you dearly. What do I mean by that? I got an Ask Dr. Jesse question. Dear Senor Kelly, do you think China's one-child policy will ultimately come back and bite them in the rear end when it comes to growing their nation, since there are 40 million more men and women who will end up helping them when they are ready to go to war? Who won't end up helping them? Anyway. I have something hard I have to say. All right, you ready for this? We've killed 40 million of our kids. I mean, you realize that, right? Probably more than 40 million. And the reason I hate saying that is, you know how much I love the country, right? And you know how much I despise anti-Americanism and how much I despise how many people aren't patriots. But let's keep something in perspective here. The pro-abortion left in this country is responsible for just as many dead kids as the communists in China are. That's just a fact. That's a fact. And you know what? Let's address China and us. What will that cost us in the end? What will China having a one-child policy cost them? What will our absurd obsession with abortion cost us? And the answer to that question is this. I don't know. But it's a lot. And the reason I don't know is I don't know what would have happened had every one of those kids been born and been given a chance at life. What does that mean? And I'm not doing a pro-abortion, anti-abortion thing for you here, but 40 million babies? Just think about 40 million babies lined up for you, all out on the ground, 40 million babies. Which one of those kids is going to grow up to cure cancer? Which one of those kids is going to grow up to invent a robust missile defense system that means America is safe from nuclear weapons forever? Which one of those kids is going to grow up to be a great president one day? Which one of those kids was going to be a great pastor? Which one of those kids would have been a good mother or father? Which one of those kids would have changed the world? And the answer is, obviously, I don't know, because they were never given a chance. The same as the little Chinese kids, the ones China let killed. I don't know what would have happened, but you know there were some diamonds in there, right? Let's just assume, if you want to make that argument, that's fine. Oh, they're all poor. They wouldn't have been given a chance and end up in jail. Okay, whatever. You can make that argument, but it's impossible to argue with numbers like that. We didn't kill some diamonds. We didn't kill some people who would have changed the world. So if China's in trouble, so are we. Let's dig in. Hang on.
Newton Group Transfer. They are here to help you if you're stuck in a timeshare. These stories from people who have these timeshares and can't get out of them, they're shocking. These timeshare companies, not all of them, but so many, they get their hooks into you and you can't give them up. You can't give them up. Or they'll do things like they charge you thousands of dollars. One girl, she got past her timeshare when her mother passed away. She gets past the timeshare, doesn't want the timeshare, doesn't use the timeshare. They tell her she can get out of it for $4,000. She has to come up with a $4,000 check. This is not right. It's unjust. And Newton Group Transfers is here to help you. If you are in a timeshare and want out or know someone who is, call 888-845-3773. That's 888-84-JESSE. Or go to timesharejesse.com, Newton Group Transfer. They will help you out.
In the fall of 1986, Ronald Reagan found himself at the center of a massive scandal that looked like it might bring down his presidency. It became known as the Iran-Contra affair.
The things that happened were so bizarre and insane, I can't begin to tell you.
Please do.
To hear the whole story, listen to Fiasco, Iran-Contra on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. On this week's episode of Math & Magic, I'm sitting down with the one and only Bobby Bones. We're exploring the power of audio.
Yeah, I don't fit into one specific hole. I think that is what endeared me to listeners. That's why I'm here now, because I talk to people that grew up like me, have sensibilities like me, and have loyalties like me.
Listen to Math and Magic, stories from the frontiers of marketing on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
Hey, Clay, if there was a summer camp for critical thinking, we'd be the chief counselors.
Those jellyheads in June would be intellectual warriors by August.
Be a lot of fun, too. Some Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure references thrown in.
This podcast, like a daily dose of that, minus the campfires, archery, and pranking the girls.
The bona fide boot camp for critical thinking. You can get in on it for free at the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search our names, Clay and Buck, listen and subscribe.
You're listening to an iHeart podcast.